TSN hockey analyst, joining us on the Maple Toyota Hotline, Ray Ferraro. What was your reaction to the deal, Carlson to San Jose?
Surprised initially, I think. And then, you know, sitting back and thinking a minute about it was that, you know, Doug Wilson, you know, was pretty aggressive in trying to chase after Tavares. And so clearly their owner was going to give them the cap space or the cap money to go ahead and chase somebody that costs a lot of money. So that made sense to me. And if you can't get a big-name centerman, the next place I spend my money is on the blue line. And, you know, now you have to think that for half the game, they're going to have either Burns or Carlson on the ice. One of the two of them, sometimes both. Like, that's pretty amazing stuff. And they didn't, you know, they didn't pillage their own farm system. You know, the players they got, you know, Tierney's an okay player. I'd say, you know, he's a third line guy. I know, you know, I've seen the other two kids. Balser scored 20 plus goals in the American League. I've seen him at the World Championships. He plays for Latvia. He's a good skater. Josh Norris is a competitive guy. His dad actually won a World Junior gold medal for Canada, I think, in 1990. Or 1980, rather. And so the problem I have with the deal is that there is no front-runner player to the deal. Like, so many times teams, it almost seems to satisfy the curiosity or the hope most times with the team acquiring all the picks. It's that, oh, yeah, but we got all these first-rounders and we got all these young guys. And so it becomes a deal. We got a first and a prospect and a second. But at the end of the day, wouldn't you be better off? They had plenty of time. This didn't have to happen this week. I mean, this should have happened last deadline or at the draft.
So some people in this building, Ray, thought this was a fleecing by the San Jose Sharks. How do you grade this trade and the work by Pierre Dorion?
C+, I guess. You know, nothing higher. And the reason I say that, though, is that they got into a spot here where they had to make this deal. Like, Carlson could not start the year in Ottawa.
Mm-hmm.
And so now the problem is when you set a deadline, if the deadline you set only works against you, it's not much of a deadline.
Well, we were talking earlier, how much less of a deal is this right now compared to what would have been offered last year at the deadline? Because wouldn't you agree that would have been Carlson's highest value, a team having two runs with him in the playoffs?
100%. I mean, you would have been able to open up your market a little bit. They knew they had to give up their first round pick in either 19 or 20. So that would have been that was part of the Duchesne deal. And so, or 18 or 19 rather. And so that would be the starting point for the deal. They got to recoup that pick. So that would have taken a little bit of long-range planning. Were they going to give up the pick in 18 or in 19? Clearly, they decided it was going to be in 19 because they went ahead and took Matthew Tkachuk. So they were going to have to, I got too many Tkachuks in my head, Brady Tkachuk. They're going to have to recoup that pick. So that would have been an easy one to get started. And then the team that is going to acquire Carlson, at that time, you know they must think they're close. So under some time pressure of the deadline, maybe you get one of their very top prospects and the first. Like, you don't get a bunch of, I hope, prospects. You get something more of a sure thing. And I think the longer you wait in this case, you get a bunch of prospects and players that you hope can be good NHL players. I know Dorion, I read something, he said, you know, they're top-end prospects. Balser scored 23 goals last year in the American League. He's not a 23-goal scorer in the NHL, by my estimation, and by what I've seen. So, you know, that's just one of the players that, you know, now, you know, you've got to hope your first-rounder hits, which, of course, is, you would suspect, would be a lower first-rounder, because it looks like the Sharks are pretty good for the next few years.
Well, we were talking...
Not a high pick.
Yeah. What about the Sens doing the rebuild with the potential of handing over Jack Hughes to the Colorado Avalanche in the first year of the rebuild? I mean, that's crushing.
Well, that's why I thought they, you know, I guess probably lots of people felt that they should have given up the first round pick this year.
Yeah, they obviously knew this was coming.
And this it becomes even more evident now, doesn't it, Ray? Especially from a marketing standpoint. Like one carrot you could have left in front of your fans' faces today was, hey, we're going to be awful, but we could get that first pick.
Right.
And that's gone.
It's no matter how they try to recoup that pick, they're not, and now they don't have any chance. The next target for me is two targets are Duchesne and Stone. They have to figure out if they're going to be able to get those guys signed. If they're interested in signing, and if they're not, maybe they can move them. But the players or the teams that are going to be interested are not going to be in that lottery.
Right.
They're not going to be at the top end of that draft where they could recoup a pick that might become Jack Hughes or whomever is going to be the number one pick. But, you know, right now I understand what they're trying to do, but this feels a little bit to me, Noodles, you tell me if you agree, but in 93 when we made the semifinals in New York,
right.
We were pretty excited about our team. Well, in the offseason, Glenn Healy, who was our goalie, he left as a free agent to the Rangers. So they made a kind of a panicky deal with Quebec. We got Ron Hextall. We flipped picks in the first round. We got Brett Lindros, Quebec got Adam Deadmarsh. And then in the next year, we made a trade because of contract stuff where we traded Pierre Turgeon, our best player, and Vladimir Malakhov to New York or to Montreal for Matthew Schneider and Kirk Muller. And in the span of 7 months, we were miles away from the team we used to be.
What a brutal trade.
And so now I look at Ottawa. If I read one more time, they made the conference final 2 years ago. Well, who cares? That might as well be 100 years ago.
It seems like it's a lifetime ago. It really does. And the team has changed so much. That's, I will say the league turns quite quickly because, you saw we didn't think Colorado coming off a 47-point season was going to have that type of season, but there's no Nathan MacKinnon on that team.
That's the thing. MacKinnon, Landeskog were already on the team.
Right, and they had Rantanen coming.
Right. Like,
this kid is a really good player. But I'm looking at Ottawa, and you're right, there's a lot of what-ifs. And that's, if you're a fan, the biggest challenge, and we were saying it before he came on, Ray, they have no chance at Jack Hughes. None. Like, they're not going to get...
They're not going to be in the lottery. There's going to be a lottery show next year, and more than likely, Ottawa will not be represented.
Right.
And guys, and even one more point here that, for what an impossibly large mountain they have to climb this year. So today, it looks like Jean-Gabriel Pagel blew his Achilles tendon out doing physical testing. If there is nothing that pisses me off more that players still do, is physical testing where they get hurt. How stupid 1987 is this? And I'm not singling out the Senators because every team does it.
Yep.
How useless is this?
Justin because Williams did it when I was trying to make a comeback, Ray, and I will guarantee you Jimmy Rutherford said, no more of this garbage, do body fat, do whatever, but there's nothing. And probably any team under Jim Rutherford does any of this ever anymore.
Well, here's the thing. The guys now... They get 4 days of camp and then they start playing exhibition games. If somebody's stupid enough to show up out of shape, you're going to know within 3 days.
No kidding.
Do you really need to do testing? They lose Pagel. Pagel's going to miss most of the season under the very best of circumstances. Like, it is ridiculous to be doing this testing.
I agree.
It gives the strength coach something to do. I guess they can all count and. As you squawk out your bench press, and they can all tell you to pedal faster on the Wingate 30-second bite test and all this stuff that the guys have to do. And to me, it means nothing because every year there's a guy that can lift the gym, he can run faster than everybody else, and then you throw the puck down and he gets confused.
It's such a good point. True. It's such an antiquated practice because back in 1987, it made sense because that guy who had 25% body fat, you might want to test him out.
Yeah.
In 2018, these are mutants. They're not humans.
But Wayne Gretzky couldn't bench the bar barely. I think he was fine. Like it's just we have story after story, and Ray, you can throw them out there as the comments, like of players that we played with were like went and did one bench press and said, "Yep, I got 86 last year. I'm good."
You can guess who that. Real quick ones to this noodle.
Yeah,
Glenn Healy signs with the Rangers as a free agent. He's never done a bench press in his life. You know what Heels looks like. And so he wasn't in much better shape when he played. Anyway, so Heels gets on the bench with the Rangers. He's like, man, I guess I better do the bench because, you know, I'm a new guy. He does like three for whatever his weight was. Couldn't lift his arms for a week. They were blowing it over his glove, and I guess somebody came up and asked him. They're like, did you go on the ice this summer? He's like, yeah, I can't lift my arms. That was from the bench press.
That's
the other
amazing.
One was Mario Lemieux. He's 18 years old. He walks into the training. He sees the weight on the bench. He goes, yeah, write me down for zero. And he scored on his first shift against Boston. I mean, like, the point being, it doesn't matter. They're going to pick who they're going to pick. They're not going to go, oh, you know what? We should pick this guy. Even though he's no good, man, he was in great shape. The hell does it matter?
It's so true.
Yeah.
Just so the strength coach can collect his check.
Yeah, it's justifying, but it doesn't make sense. You're right. Like, I had a goalie coach who was a legendary player said, I've never seen an exercise bike stop a puck. You know, relax, go play. Like, you know, I played with guys who were ridiculous. Like that, what was it, 2.5 minute wind gate? We had a defenseman, Robin Regeer, would ride it for 5 minutes at 780 watts and then just get off. He'd quit at 5 minutes. Like, I'm good. Like, I could barely get the pedals around the 2 minute mark. These guys would ride it for five into the ground and just quit. Like, it doesn't matter. I hated that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's ridiculous.
And with injuries, it makes it just that much more ridiculous. With Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst. So now that it's day one of camp, I'm springing this on all four of us here, but when you look at the Atlantic Division, Tampa, Boston, Toronto, Florida, Detroit, Montreal, Ottawa, Buffalo, how do you see this playing out day one?
I think four teams make the playoffs. I think Florida's going to make it this year. Certainly, you know, some of that's on if Luongo can stay healthy, but I think they're pretty good. I mean, they missed by a point last year. You know, Barkov is a fantastic player, but I see the problem for the teams that are trying to improve in that division is the big boys, Tampa, Toronto, and Boston are really good.
Yeah,
and they're gonna pound the bottom of the division.
Everyone
while
is.
Those teams are trying to get the bottom of their, you know, those teams are just trying to figure out what they got. Buffalo is trying to get Mittelstadt in, and Detroit's trying to get Zadina in and Rasmus in, and so they're trying to. All those teams are trying to inch their way along, and man, they're miles from those good teams.
Yeah, I think the same thing. You look at the top, Tampa, Boston, Toronto, they're just going to jockey for position all year long.
Yeah.
I think Florida is going to be a good team, depending on Bobby Lou's health. Buffalo could surprise people and push, and I think those bottom three teams are just going to get dummied.
Even Montreal with Price, if he's healthy and performs? I mean, that's the one wild card,
isn't
it, Price?
They could push to be like on the outside of a wild card, like in ninth, you know, like something like that. But the top three teams for me are set in stone, and we're going to have a situation where if everything goes right with those teams, where, what was it, Christmas on last year?
Yeah, all three of them had determined where they were by Christmas at the latest.
Yeah. I mean, Tampa had that ridiculous run and came back to earth a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then Boston went on a run from November, wasn't it?
They were the hottest team in the league.
Those guys had stretched themselves so far away from the division, it was like it was two different games going on.
Right.
You know, so I, like, to Montreal, I mean, Price, of course, makes a huge difference when he's healthy and he can play and, you know, and so I'm going to say, yeah, I think he's going to do that again. But they don't have Weber for a long time. Paul Byron's not going to be ready to start camp. Like, they're already injured. Their center ice position is terrible right now. I mean, you know, they just got Suzuki. But look at, you know, where are the goals coming from? They got to score eventually, even with Price back. And, you know, now without Pacioretty, I do think it's a bit of a longer year maybe than, you know, Noodles, you think they can get around the edge of the playoffs. I just don't really feel that.
That's if Price plays like Price. If he doesn't, if he if he just succumbs to getting piled on, then, yeah, they're 11th, 12th.
Yeah. I think the one thing I feel somewhat confident in is that for the first time in 5-6 years, Buffalo probably won't finish last.
I think Buffalo is one of the... I've told these guys this. I don't know where you are, Ray, but I think they quietly had an outstanding summer. And I think, you know, if Ullmark and Hutton can hold up in net, because that's a significant upgrade for me. Robin Lehner is, I don't know if you guys read that article today.
Oh my gosh, he's gone
through some struggles, and, you know, I hope he's all right, but he was at best a very erratic goaltender. For me, Linus Ullmark is a really up and coming good goaltender, kind of like Vasilevsky was before, you know, he was pushing to be an NHLer. And so I think he's a couple years away from being really good, but Hutton will bring him along. But, you know, Dahlin settling in, Middlestad. I think they had a good summer, but they're not at that next level yet. But they're going to be better than some of the other teams we were talking about.
What do you make of this news today that Tavares, Marleau, and Riley will have the three A's on their jersey, no captain, and Matthews doesn't have a letter?
I'm not really surprised. I mean, you know, so you've got your two oldest guys, or your, you know, two of your most seasoned players, and, you know, Tavares, and, you know, one of your most prominent players, and of course Marleau, and then I think it, you know, when you're in that room, when you walk around like in a morning skate or something, there's just so we're not in there when the players are just talking amongst themselves, but Riley has a quality to him that just is a leader. Just, he's calm. He's really sure of himself. I'm not surprised. I guess, you know, the story really is not that those guys have the A's. It's that Matthews doesn't. And that's probably a year away, I guess. I think once they get going and guys drop the puck for real, I don't think it becomes a big story. It's a story, I guess, today, but for me, not a huge one.
Ray, before we let you go, we did a little thing this show called What Was Your Routine Today? Do you care to share your routine?
Today?
Mm-hmm.
I got up and humbled.
Time?
7:45. Meeting KP in the lobby at 8:30. Unfortunately, KP's set his alarm for 8 o'clock p.m., not 8 a.m. So I texted him. I emailed him. Then I phoned him. He's like, oh, yeah, sorry, dude. I'll be down in 10 minutes. We drove from there to Saskatoon. I'm like, hey, we got time to go across the road to Tim Hortons. No, that's not a good thing. We're not going to make it. So we zipped our way to the airport in Saskatoon. He went to drop the car off. I abandoned him, totally abandoned him. And I said, you're on your own, chum, here. I'm getting through the gate. So got up to the gate, just flew home, and that was it. That's the routine.
All right.
Usually I start home in the gym. That's where I started.
Well, I was getting abused because I went to bed at 1 a.m., which is not ridiculous, but I woke up at 11:30. I had a little sleep in today, and the boys were just abusing.
Are you a teenager?
Usually I'm up.
11:30, grown man in his 40s.
And I just kind of watched SportsCenter, a couple coffees, hung out and came to work.
I can't remember the last time I've ever slept at 11:30. Ever. And I've gotten home at 7:30 in the morning and been up before 11:30.
Mm-hmm.
See, the only way I'm in bed at 11:30, there are times I'm a little bit of a sloth. And so, like, I'll wake up at 6:30 and I do whatever I'm going to do. And then at, like, 11 o'clock, I'll say to Cammie, I think I'm going to go shut her down for a half an hour. She's like, are you serious? It's not even lunch yet. And I said, well, then I'll be hungry when I get up. I don't know.
It's tough to float the nap out to the wife, though, man. You are putting your life in danger.
Women hate other women that don't like their Instagram and a man having a nap. They're born that way. They hate a man napping.
Why?
I will say this about my wife, because she was a hockey player, of course. Oftentimes we'll say, you going to nap first or me?
That's a match made in heaven,
buddy. I just got to walk by the couch and see Peg Bundy passed out there. I can sleep anytime I want.
That's true. You've got a lot of bullets in the chamber.
Now that you got the two kids, you're like, well, I guess I'm not napping now.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Well, it was a great job you guys did last night in Humboldt.
Yeah, it was awesome.
It was a really tough position to be in. I'm sure it was an emotional night, but you guys handled it like pros. It was really, really well done.
Oh, thanks. I think we were all really relieved after that, like we were proud of how the night went.
Yeah.
I will say this, though. When they were unveiling those banners at the end of the night, that's the saddest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was...
Like watching those kids on the carpet, they were just sobbing, broken. Yeah. You know, and then after you, some parents were out on the ice and, you know, getting, you know, like kind of just nestling up to their son's banner.
Yeah.
You know, just looking at it. And it just, I just, those poor people, I just, to see it firsthand was really, really something. I mean, that community is, they're real strong and they're really connected and tight. But man, I'm telling you guys, that was, you could literally hear people crying in the arena when they were unveiling the banners. It was just, it was one of the most saddest things I've ever seen.
Yeah, you could feel it through the TV. Yeah, I couldn't imagine being in attendance. Hopefully we don't ever have to do anything like that again.
Yeah, exactly.
Great stuff, buddy. We'll do it again soon. Thanks for doing this today.
Yeah, you bet. You guys have a good one. We'll talk to you soon.
There's Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline.